For those people that are watching this or they're listening, if you're holding Bitcoin, we are going to see a transformation of wealth and wealth classes going forward here.
It's inevitable, but we see a lot more institutional adoption. We see MicroStrategy, now Strategy. We see the ETFs. We see nation states talking about reserves.
You want to block my bank account? Take it. Shove it up your ass. I don't want it. I have real money now. That is the power of Bitcoin. It's not the number go up.
So this train's leaving. All three of us, look on your screen right now. The three of us, we got a ticket. Okay, it's a Bitcoin ticket. Each one of us has got a Bitcoin ticket. We're on the train.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Appreciate you tuning in. Today on the show, we have a special guest, George Bodine, who is a fascinating character. Some incredible experiences. We talk with myself and our founder, Tony Yazbek, all things Bitcoin. We talk about everything going on with the ETFs. We talk about self-custody, where we're headed from here, some of the inevitabilities of Bitcoin adoption and the concerns for people who don't have a ticket on this Bitcoin train. I think you're absolutely going to love this conversation. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got George and Tony with me. George, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I'm excited about this today. Like we used to say in the Navy, we are going to set condition zebra. We're going to batten down hatches and we're going to brace for impact. So I'm definitely ready.
I love it.
Let's go.
Well, I think if our offline chat was our brief offline chat was any indication of how the conversation is going to go, this is going to be a lot of fun. So, George, I know you've been on a few podcasts, but I think you're still earlier in your adventure of podcasting. Why don't you just tell anyone who isn't familiar with you a little bit about you? Because I think everyone probably knows Tony.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. You know, I was just talking to Tony a minute ago, and I said, you know, basically, I had made a decision probably a year, maybe a year and a half ago, that I was going to start backing out of the Bitcoin space as far as a public face. And that's just due to security reasons and stuff. But then, you know, I posted something and Bob Burnett replied to me, and Larry Lepard and Bob are friends of mine, and they both kind of encouraged me. They said, you know, you've got a story to tell. Your age and your experience, you can help people if you're willing to go out there. And I figured, you know what? I'm already outed. Everybody knows who I am as far as on Twitter. You can find my name. And in today's world, you know, you're going to have trouble hiding. So I just decided to come out and start doing podcasts. I have an unusual background. And I mentioned that I dropped out of high school. Actually, that's not true. I was expelled from high school. And I'm lucky I wasn't incarcerated from the incident. But I went on and I started flying airplanes around for a guy that was like a used car dealer all over the country. And he'd put me on a Greyhound bus. I'd go pick up a plane somewhere and fly it home. I was 17 years old, high school dropout. And after that, I went to college, started a college, but I dropped out of college too. So that, you know, things were not going well as far as the start of my life journey, I guess. And then after that, I drifted west. I ended up in the state of Wyoming I was working in the oil fields there. And I had put in an application as I was going across the country. I'd put in an application in one of those western cities, a small one, and they called me and I actually got hired. I'm an ex-cop. I worked as a cop. And finally, I got burned out on that, which is a long story. And then I started drifting south and I crossed the high plains of Colorado and into the mountains. Next thing you knew, I was working as a miner. I'm not a Bitcoin miner. I mean, really underground. I worked as deep as almost 2 miles down. So that was quite an experience. And then at one point I was just staring at a tunnel wall one day thinking, man, my life sucks. I'm kind of a loser. And so I ended up living in my mom and dad's basement and, went back to college. I got a degree. And because of my flying experience, I actually applied for the Navy. They needed pilots. I got hired. I actually got inducted into the Navy and met some Marines up real close and personal who managed to straighten my ass out and turn me into an officer and a gentleman. And then because of my flying background and my just drive, I was driven. I ended up graduating number one. And I got to pick Hornets F-18s, which were kind of a new jet at the time. And boy, that's a kick-ass jet. I'll just tell you right, the F-18 is a That is a Chinook jet. And then I was fortunate they used that plane in the Top Gun movie, and I actually got to go through Top Gun. And then later I became an adversary instructor pilot for Top Gun up in Nevada, again, out west. And that was quite an experience. And it was some great flying. And then after that, I got hired by Delta, flew for them. And unfortunately, I had a motorcycle accident. I used to build motorcycle like choppers and stuff. And then I got hurt pretty bad, a brain injury, and ended my flying career. And, you know, so everything I say today is not financial advice. This is just me talking. Obviously, you're listening to guys that's had a brain injury, so don't take anything that I say too seriously. And we're just going to have a good time talking about some of these things that are going on right now.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Hey, George, I'm going to stick with you for a minute here because you've got a lot of paintings behind you. And I think your most recent gig has been as an artist, and you're an incredible artist. I would love for you to just talk a little bit about that. But one thing I want to get into, and just to set the stage, I know that art is highly subjective. I know as little about art as almost any subject under the sun. But my sense is, and Tony, I think I'm sure you're going to have some commentary on maybe the general theme that I'm hitting on here. There are a lot fewer Bodines and Da Vincis and people who have shown proof of work, it seems to me, nowadays. And I'm curious if that's your belief and sense in that we've sort of lost a lot of the aesthetic appeal of art. Is that something that you kind of maybe broadly sense? And if so, I mean, this might be a good segue into Bitcoin and into the fiat economy and what, you know, maybe what's changed over the last hundred, certainly, you know, several hundred years.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. You know, that's such an interesting subject. I mean, I've always liked art, you know, even when I was doing all these different things, I always enjoyed art. And I've spent easily 10,000 hours in art. I mean, I am a master at what I do. And I don't say that in any bragging way. I'm just saying that I've mastered my craft. I'm good at it. And the stuff you see, I'm sure you can go to a full screen later in my studio and see some of the work. But the thing is, these pieces, they're all archival. I mean, they'll last hundreds of years, long after I'm gone. And I don't really want to talk about my art so much, but there's two things I'm going to say. You know, I can't judge what is art or what isn't art. I do know that for those people that are watching this or they're listening, if you're holding Bitcoin, we are going to see a transformation of wealth and wealth classes going forward here. We're going to see a new generation of wealth come along. And they're not going to be old farts like me. They're going to be young kids. They're going to be like you. You're going to be people out there that are going to be transforming this world into a better place. And it's going to be based on, in my mind, ethics, morality, sound money, people that, you know, have a strong base of who they are and what they want the world to be. And, you know, there are all types of ways that people are going to be expressing themselves. Like just think for a minute, Michael, if you ended up, you know, in a position where you could really just not retire, but do exactly what you wanted. Maybe it'd be woodworking. Maybe it'll be a music instrument. Maybe you'll want to paint, draw, throw stuff around. I don't know where this is going. But I think when you talk about art, we shouldn't even think so much about paintings. You know, beautiful buildings are works of art. I had a plumber at my house one time. That guy was an artist. I shit you not. That guy knew what he was doing. He was a craftsman. He'd spent 20 years learning his craft. He had his 10,000 hours in. He was an expert. And when he was down there putting together pipes in my basement, that guy, I looked at the way he sweated those joints and looked at how he bent pipe and stuff. That guy was an artist. He took pride in his craft. So I don't think it's really so much about the paintings. I really think what it is a mindset, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Tony and I were actually just talking yesterday. We, you know, he's got older kids than I do, but we're talking about, you know, this sort of the balance of raising kids and seeking out hardship and stuff. And Tony, I'm not going to speak for you, but I'll speak for myself. And Tony, you feel free to chime in. Like, I think about, you know, Bitcoin as, I told my wife this. I said, you know, the Bitcoin that we've accumulated and continue to accumulate really has very little to do with us and our life, but the future that I want my kids to have and see. And I think you're hitting on something really important is when you're not, when you can step off of the hamster wheel and quit chasing, you know, this sort of, how do I just keep my head above water? It frees you to hone your craft and to spend the time to put in the proof of work to be really good at something. And I saw a meme someone shared just this morning, and it was like a drain pipe from the 19th century. And it was like this beautiful, incredible work of art, and then a drain pipe from the 20th century. And it was just this, you know, metal hunk of, you know, it was ugly, and it was like, you know, what have we lost? So I don't know, Tony, I guess maybe as someone who, you've got a, I think an 18-year-old, how do you think about what maybe his future will look like in light of a you know, hopefully a Bitcoin standard here in the coming years?
Well, this is something that I constantly struggle with, you know. From my experience, Bitcoin really pushes you to find out who you are, especially if you're introduced to it, you know, from extreme pain, in the same way that I was. What I went through 5 years ago was a complete horror story that, you know, I've spoken of many times, and I do not wish on anyone to ever come remotely close to anything like that. But what it did do is that it made me find out who I really was, you know. And like I said, if you want to know what you're truly made of, you have to be pushed to the bare metal of your existence, you know, down to the bare roots of your DNA to see what you're capable of doing. And you will never find out unless you have no other option but to discover that in order to come out of the hellhole that you're in. And once you do this and you survive, everything about your lens on the world changes. And because of this, I am no longer the same person I used to be, but and the same token, my kids are not who I am today either. And obviously, because of the age difference, I can't expect to teleport everything about myself now into an 18-year-old's head and expect him to understand it from day one, right? So it's this constant struggle to find that balance of, you cannot be lazy, you cannot be weak, you cannot give up, you cannot find the shortcuts, you cannot always look for the break or the excuse. You know, you want to keep drilling that message, but in a way that doesn't at some point alienate him from you completely, right? Like at some point, if you keep, you know, playing that same tune, they just cut you out, you know, attention goes to zero, and then you've completely lost the plot. So I find that this is one of the hardest things to deal with, and I don't give up on it, you know. So whether he hates me in the moment or not, you know, my mission is clear here. I'm going to raise a Navy SEAL soldier, character-wise. Whether he likes it or not now, at some point he will thank me for it, because it is for his own good. I wish I had someone like myself today to talk to me when I was 18. I didn't. I had to experience everything the old-fashioned way, you know, trial and error. Smash into a wall, okay, that's a bad idea, don't do it again. But I didn't have that strong masculine father figure. I had a great father. He was an epic role model in many other things. He was self-made. He was nuked to zero 3 times in his life through reasons none of them were his own, due to war and all that. He was also stripped down to zero, had to start over from scratch in the same way I did. I never thought I would ever have to go through what he did, but lo and behold, you know, life has a funny way of testing you sometimes. So he was a great role model in that sense, but he wasn't a great role model in, you know, like having a guy, masculine father figure, you know, to always like, they can always like mentor you through life type of thing. He was pretty much absent for the most part of my life. He was always traveling on work and what have you. So a lot of the things I had to discover on my own, and for sure half of them, you know, bombed before I actually learned anything. And the biggest explosion was 5 years ago when I absolutely got annihilated by, you know, believing the bullshit that I was taught from day one. that, you know, you leave your money in the bank and you live happily ever after if you have a successful life. So all of that, I'm trying to wrap into a brand new lesson and pass it along to my kids as fast as possible, because he's 18. If you learn this at a very young age, you can have one hell of a crazy solid future where you're in control of almost every element of it. And that's what I want him to do, so that he can lead by example, not let useless parasites bully him around. He needs to know his rights. He needs to know the difference between right and wrong, stand his ground, not necessarily go with the crowd. You know, I want him to be, you know, believe in himself and follow that, you know, in whichever direction that takes him. And I believe Bitcoin will let us do this, because Bitcoin redefines everything about you. It defines you more morally, you know, spiritually. It's a whole can of worms that you never thought you'd experience until you have something like this in front of you that is real and that you can, live and manage on a daily basis. So Bitcoin changed me, man. It was a serious, serious upgrade. And I'm hoping I can push this knowledge, whether it's to my kids or to whoever else I have the opportunity, you know, of interacting with. And hopefully we can keep pushing this message, you know, far and wide in order to get this to spread to 8 billion people, or as close to that as humanly possible.
Well, amen to that. I think we've got three generations represented here. I'm a millennial. I think, George, I think you're a baby boomer. And Tony, I think you're
one of those boomers.
Yeah, and we got Gen X. I'm curious, George, how you think some of what we're talking about here differs amongst these generations, because you sort of hinted at it, but I think my generation is probably, I mean, we're the generation that to some degree probably can most afford to get into Bitcoin early. And we've got the longest time horizon, obviously, to make some of these changes. I mean, how do you think about it as a baby boomer, though? Like, you've got some years to go, and certainly you've got friends and I imagine family who also do. How do you sort of frame this out for someone who's not a Bitcoiner yet?
Well, you know, I've said this before, you know, I suck at orange pilling people. I don't know why. Some people are really good at it, and I don't know what my issue is. My kids,
it's hard.
Just like with Tony, you know, my kids think I'm a village idiot sometimes. In fact, seems like as they get older, I get stupider and stupider. But some of them are, you know, I'm surprised. I mean, I've got a lot of kids, and with all the spouses, and you know, there's a lot of people that have been exposed to my story, and I've been in Bitcoin for quite a while, and you know, I'm all in. I mean, I have my entire, you know, I often say this, Bitcoin is the royal flush. So if you're playing a hand of poker and you get the royal flush, you won. Yeah, I mean, you have won. Then you're not going to lose. And so, you know, I just put all my chips in and I'm happy. But my kids, it's been a really difficult journey. I actually am estranged from one of my children over Bitcoin. And I have thought hard and long and hard about it. And you know what? I wouldn't change a damn thing. I wouldn't change this journey I'm on. He'll have to come to grips with it. And some of the other kids have got it, and some of them have bought into it. I just found out today that one of my kids has got Bitcoin in their retirement, and I didn't even know it. And I assume it's probably maybe because of my influence. But, you know, it's a very difficult, you can't get people into Bitcoin. I don't know how to say that any better. You can do just about anything you want, but that doesn't mean they're going to get into Bitcoin and they're not going to stay. That's the issue, is that most people get shaken out. You know, the volatility of Bitcoin is such that the ideal time to buy Bitcoin is when, after you smash the buy button, you go out, walk around, and you feel like you're going to throw up. And until you've been in the space long enough to understand these cycles, and I follow these cycles, you know, there are about three models I follow, and I follow on-chain metrics with James Checkmatey on X. And until you understand these cycles and realize that with conviction that you're buying something that you're holding forever, then you can just relax. I mean, I live a very relaxed life right now. Every year, I mean, I get wealthier and wealthier. And for somebody like you, in your age group, let me just tell you something. Right now, I think we were talking about this before the podcast, these dipshits that just sold their Bitcoin. This morning, it's the 12th of February. It's in the morning at 8:30 a.m. today. They printed the CPI. It came in hot. I think it was like 0.4 and they were expecting 0.3. Came out to maybe an annualized rate of 3%. I mean, who gives a shit? You know, I don't even believe those numbers anyway. But the bottom line is, if you looked at the Bitcoin price, it went, yeah, just like that, straight down. And I was thinking, well, you know, stupid people sell there. And then, of course, it could be algo-driven too. You know, immediately it just started bouncing right back up. You know, you are going to get shaken out if you don't understand what you hold. So it doesn't matter what any of us say as far as orange pilling. I believe in it. I believe in trying to educate people. But, you know, they've got to get to a point where they can stand that volatility, understand what they hold. And what I was going to, before I quit, I just want to get back to what I was going to say to you, Michael, which is this. So Bitcoin's around, let's just say 100,000. You know, you get a tenth of a Bitcoin right now. Just get, you know, a tenth of a fucking Bitcoin right now. You know, you can hold on to that. I mean, look at you. Are you going to sit around? You're not retiring right now. You got stuff to do. You're going to live your life. You got kids. You know, you've got things that you want to do. 20 years will go by like that, buddy. Take it from somebody who's sitting here and time is finite. Well, you take that 10 grand and you, everybody listening right now, you can go online and find something called a reverse CAGR calculator, C-A-G-R, CAGR calculator. And it's going to come up and it's going to ask you to fill in these three little things. You put in $10,000, a tenth of a Bitcoin today. And then the next thing you put in is 20 years. Jethro said you got to stick in, that was my call sign, Jethro, in the Navy. You got to stick in 20 years in there. And then you come up with what you think the cumulative annual growth rate for Bitcoin is going to be over the next 20 years. The last 5 years, it's been 55%. You stick that number in there and it's astronomical. It's like $64 million. But let's just say that the price, you know, the AAR, the annual return goes down. So put in 40%. I don't give a shit. Just put in 40%. It still comes out to like, it's between $8 and $9 million. You know that if you were sitting on $9 million right now, do you realize how much you can get in passive income? And it's in cuck bucks. I mean, you know, fiat dollars. But imagine what's going to come down our road with Bitcoin. We are going to see so many products here. And I'm not going to get into that subject right now because we could spend 10 minutes just on that with the products that are coming down the road, but we will see them. And you're going to see some people that someday they're going to start actually dabbling in returns on these products.
Yeah, I think maybe what's so challenging for people is, this is my belief, is I think we as Bitcoiners tend to get excited about Bitcoin. We've done the deep dive. We've gone down the rabbit hole. We understand, I mean, at least to the best the human mind can understand digital scarcity. I think what most people don't realize is that they suffer from recency bias. They don't recognize the problem that Bitcoin is solving. They don't understand what $36 trillion in debt means. They don't understand that they're literally aren't enough dollars to pay down the global debt in dollar-denominated, you know, the dollar-denominated debt around the globe. And so what does that mean? What has to happen? Well, you're probably not going to raise taxes to the point that you can cover that. Like, there, you go down the list of, like, what are their options? And you sort of land on the only politically viable option is print. And when massive money printing meets a digitally scarce asset, that it also has the attributes of your ability to self-custody, it's decentralized, it's global, you know, on the Lightning Network, instantaneous settlement, on the on-chain, you know, it's 10 minutes. That is an incredibly powerful combination. But most people either don't take the time or just don't believe that the problem it solves is massive and it's here in front of us. I don't know if that's maybe sort of how I like to think about. I think we jump too quickly into Bitcoin and we don't linger on what's the problem long enough, maybe. That's maybe the biggest challenge.
It goes beyond that, especially depending where you live. When you understand how the world is put together after you've experienced like extreme loss, you understand that right now in the current system, if you do nothing, you are somebody else's bitch. As plain as simple as that is, okay? You are using money that was created by a bunch of thieves, a bunch of psychopaths designed to steal, manipulate, censor, and control. That's it. You're somebody else's donkey. You think you're free. You're not free. Because you're working for money that they control, they can print out of nothing. They tax you on it, right? So you're being ripped off in all sorts of directions for what? For the illusion of being free. Because depending on where you live, if you push a button, you can buy a burger. And if you push a button, you can send it to so-and-so. But what happens if you wake up one day and that button doesn't work anymore? Yeah. The problem is that hasn't come everywhere yet. It's only come the countries that have experienced this. You don't need to convince them for more than 3 seconds that they cannot remain in the system, right? So it takes something like this to snap you out of it, to realize that Bitcoin is the only time where you are not dependent on somebody else's decision around your time and energy. Your dignity as a human being is not dictated by the whims of some Looney Tune sitting around the table with his bunch of buddies, right? That's really the essence of Bitcoin for me. It's fuck you money, right? In that sense, it's like no one's going to decide what I do with my time and energy. As long as I'm not breaking any legitimate rules, not bullshit mandates created to push a narrative, as long as I'm not breaking any legitimate rules, no one has a hold on me. And I won't listen or respect to anyone because I don't have to now. You want to block my bank account? Take it. Shove it up your ass. I don't want it. I have real money now. That is the power of Bitcoin. It's not the number go up. It's I have my time and energy. You don't want me to do something? Fuck you. I've got 10 other options. That's the power of Bitcoin. And by the same token, because a lot of people are still measuring it by the number go up, yes, your purchasing power is increasing exponentially. Because it's the only money that is finite in supply that is not printed to oblivion by a bunch of, you know, crooks, essentially. So if you're holding this, you know, golden goose, you know, for those that call it magic internet money, you can think of it as that way. The result is the same. If you're holding it, your life is becoming cheaper and in many cases free. But free in the financial side is just one side. You're free as a human being to go and do and say and think whatever you want without any fear of being shut down or censored by anyone. That is Bitcoin. Like, this is for me, this is what Bitcoin represents, which is why there is nothing in this universe that can change my conviction about this, right? So, but until you come from where I've come from, it's very hard to understand why I say with the conviction that I say. Like, some people might think this guy is just a crazy Looney Tune, you know, but until your turn comes, which I think it is coming, because there's no way to save this Ponzi. I mean, it can last for, you know, a few more years, but, you know, during that time frame, your life is going to become exponentially more miserable, you know, unless you find some crazy way to supplement your income. But it's a race against a leaking bucket whose hole keeps expanding every year. Reference to that CPI. Like, I mean, if you believe these bullshit numbers of 3%, you must really believe in Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny too, right? I mean, kind of a retard, are you? Inflation is double digits at best, worldwide, wherever you are. In some places, even worse. And if you still think that you're going to go get 17 jobs in order to maintain a certain lifestyle, you're just headed off a cliff.
Tony, I couldn't agree more. The challenge, though, in my view, is that illusion of freedom is an incredibly powerful one. And what people really crave is, I think what most people really crave is like sufficient freedom, or at least to feel like they have some freedom. But what they really, really, really want is safety. And if I can trust my financial advisor, if I can trust the government, if I can trust someone else, then I don't have to do the hard work. And in fairness to those people who do feel that way, they're the ones on the hamster wheel. And if they step off the hamster wheel and they don't understand Bitcoin yet, they're going to get slammed by 3% inflation. That's really, you know, 7% inflation or whatever. But George, that was a good rant, Tony. I'll let you respond to that or give your thoughts on it, George.
Well, you know, I come from a privileged existence. I mean, I haven't had, you know, I haven't been rug pulled like Tony has, but at the same time, you know, that I always want to have that optionality. I maintain a Bitcoin and a wallet that I'm under control of, but I will say I've had to move that wallet. I've taken it out of the home just because of security concerns lately. But, you know, I always want that idea that I can get my Bitcoin into a wallet, memorize 12 words, cross any border that I want, and, you know, they can strip search you, they can anal probe you, they can do whatever the damn thing they want. But the bottom line is, when I get on the other side with that, you know, 12 words in my head, just as Tony said, you know, I can go fuck you. And even as I'm dancing around in my nakedness, they can, you know, laugh at me all they want, but I've got my wealth intact. And so I do understand that. And it's really important. You know, there are so many issues going on right now that are driven by this fiat world that we live in. It is like a hamster wheel. You know, I've had it. One of my kids was working three jobs one time just to stay afloat. And, you know, nowadays, all the kids, you know, both the spouses are working. Sometimes they've got a side gig. They're always, you know, trying to stay up to speed with this debasement. And, you know, if you look at the money supply, M2 has gone up over the last 100 years, 6.8, well, we'll just round it to 7%, 7% every year. Now, that's just the money expansion. You know, try to front run that. And then what's the cost of capital on top of that? You know, how are you going to generate that return? And then how are you going to do it so you can sleep at night and just relax? Like Tony said, I don't worry about anything anymore. I don't give a shit. I really don't care what number they print. And you know what? I don't really even care if they print a bunch of money this year. You know, I feel for all the people that can't escape that. You know, we have an opportunity here for those people that are in Bitcoin right now. As I mentioned, you're going to create generational wealth here. You're going to change people's lives, not just yours, but the people that are tied to you, you know, whether it's family, friends. We are going to create a different world going forward. I don't know how long it'll take, but I know it's coming. And if you look at generational wealth and you look at the past families over hundreds of years, start with the Rothschilds in the 1700s when Meyer Rothschild started their first bank. And, you know, one of his famous quotes is, "Let me control a nation's money, and I care not who writes the laws." And they've lived for hundreds of years as a very wealthy family that have passed down, and they've been in banking pretty much the entire time. But, you know, the thing is, they also, as we've mentioned right now, they've also educated their children. They've taught them the value of money and what they've done is they've tried to acquire property, just like the royal family. They've tried to acquire things that are going to outpace what we just discussed. And you don't have to. You don't have to do all that damn work. The reason we're so fanatical, the reason why people sometimes get looking at us and they go, "Man, this guy's a nut," is because we really want people to see this. We want them to understand that if you just hold Bitcoin, you only got three things. Look between your legs now. You're sitting on it, you're not at your balls or something. Just look down there and you picture yourself sitting on a three-legged stool. You got three things to do. You just got to buy Bitcoin. You got to hodl it. You just got to hold on to it. Don't get shaken out like we were talking about. And then all you got to do is not lose it. You know, don't do something stupid like margin or mark-to-market call, where don't do anything dumb. Just hold on to it. That's all you got to do. And you will build wealth. You know, I'm not saying you don't stack in between. That's one of the reasons I follow James Check, is because, you know, yeah, actually I don't buy anymore, but I used to. And you know what? He can help you. You can actually end up with more corn that way. But what I'm trying to say is, just getting back to the basic principle here, all you got to do is buy Bitcoin, hold on to it, and understand how to pass that information on to the people you love and your family, and you're set. That's it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the people who I sympathize with the most who haven't figured out Bitcoin are the people who are working multiple jobs. Like, you know, they don't have time to sit around and study this in great detail, and they're, you know, barely getting by. The people who I sympathize with much less are those who are just complacent, and they're finishing their 9-to-5, coming home, watching Netflix all night, and waking up and doing the same thing. Like, there's no curiosity as to how they're really going to make this work long term. They're just putting all of their trust in someone else to make their money grow or whatever. And, you know, if they, maybe they got some assets that, that can grow with that, you know, 7-8% M2 supply rate each year. But, man, it's just like so many people are asleep at the wheel. What I'm, something that we talk about a lot, George, is, you know, we're, it's inevitable, but we see a lot more institutional adoption. We see MicroStrategy, now Strategy. We see the ETFs. We see nation states talking about reserves. I have my concerns with all of this, not because it's not their right to do so. And, it probably would be a prudent thing for anyone to adopt a Bitcoin strategy, as an institutional, entity. But that they're going to start to crowd out people. It's going to make it a lot harder for retail, for my friends, my family to even accumulate, you know, 0.1 Bitcoin. How much are you tracking this stuff? Do you have those same concerns, or is it, you know, because it's inevitable, who cares? What do you think about that?
No, I have concerns. I will tell you right now, absolutely. And before I say anything, I should disclose to people, you know, I've got Bitcoin in all kinds of buckets. I mean, everything you can imagine. I even own the Bitcoin ETFs. In fact, long before they were available, I went up to Canada through the Toronto Exchange and bought Bitcoin up there on the ETF when it was first launched. And why did I do that? Because I had retirement accounts and things of that nature that I needed to use. And, you know, I even, now that I'm older, I'm playing around. I've had a blast playing with MicroStrategy as a proxy for Bitcoin and using their ability to leverage. And it's paid off for me handsomely. But again, just getting back to what Tony hinted at earlier, I want that optionality to withdraw funds, get them in a wallet, move my ass somewhere else. And, you know, there is a real concern with the ETFs in the sense that we are creating a honeypot that is just sitting there waiting to go. And, you know, 9 out of the 11 ETFs are using Coinbase for their custody. Bitwise and ARK21 are publishing their reserves. You can see their reserves. But, you know, that's not a good situation. And, you know, I think of myself as MicroStrategy. You know, Bernstein, they just came out the other day, 2 months ago, and they said, you know, their analysts project that MicroStrategy, his goal is to get 1 million Bitcoin, 4%. And I think they're right. That is, it is a concern of mine. You know, here's how I'm going to frame this before I shut up here, but because there's not really an answer to this. In fact, you know what? There is no answer to this. If I asked either one of you guys, why don't you sit down and write me a cogent one paragraph that how you would have stopped the Bitcoin ETFs from coming into space? You can't do it.
Yeah.
How about options in the ETF? Can you do that one? Nah. Can't do any of this. And why? You know, Bitcoin is a virus. We don't control Bitcoin. We have no input over where Bitcoin's going, and it is for our enemies too. So having said some of those things, here's what I'd like to leave you with is the fact that, because you already mentioned this just now, Michael, we have a limited time left here to get this right. Because I can guarantee you, I won't put a time on it, but I guarantee you Bitcoin's going to 1 million a coin. It's just inevitable. So what's that really mean? You know, back in 22, I bought I don't remember how much I bought, but for $1,700, I got a tenth of a Bitcoin if I wanted it. And I, you know what? What's it take today? 10,000? You know what? That's a bigger chunk of change. Most people that I know back in 22 at $1,700, they could come up with it if they wanted to. They could actually buy a tenth of a Bitcoin, just like we talked about earlier, and that'll fix your ass. So 10,000, that's a little bit more of a reach now. So what if I'm right? And I could be wrong, but what if I'm right and it goes to 1 million a coin? Now, all the people you know, all the people you love, they're going to have to come up with $100,000. That's hard. And you know what? You mentioned this earlier too, Michael. It's a mental challenge to take $100,000 to get a tenth of a Bitcoin. That's a mental challenge. So this train's leaving. All three of us, look on your screen right now. The three of us, we got a ticket. Okay, it's a Bitcoin ticket. Each one of us has got a Bitcoin ticket. We're on the train. We're all sitting together having a great time. We're having a beer, relaxing. Things are great. We look out on the through the window at the platform, and there's the people we love, or the people that are our friends, acquaintances, you know, third world country. There are people huddled on that platform there. They got two kids. They're hungry, and they're not going to get on the train because it's leaving. And you've got all these big institutions walking on the fucking train, and you know, they're taking up an entire car. BlackRock, you saw they just bought 5% now. They're at 5% of MicroStrategy. They have got right now, those Bitcoin ETFs have taken up 1.1 million or more in inflows. We produce 165,000 Bitcoin a year on this network. They've got over 1.1 million in 14 months. What's that say to you guys? Anyway, I'll take a break from that rant.
So one thing I'd like your thoughts on, in George, in full disclosure, we kind of make fun of people who spend too much time talking about number go up. With that, you know, like Tony's rant on the self sovereignty, like that's what we really fixate on. But obviously, you need number go up to have the financial freedom to afford the things, not just to do the things that you want to do. I'm curious. Tony, don't kill me for going down this route, but I'm curious what you think it is, though, because you hinted at the supply shock. Like, Bitcoin's not being produced quickly enough to keep up with the demand, and we're still hovering, you know, around this $9,500,000 range. Are games being played? Are we kind of waiting for the last sellers to sell, and like you think, like then the rocket ship kind of goes?
That's another good rabbit hole to go down, because yes, there are institutions now involved that can manipulate price, in my mind. But the thing is that only to a small amount. You know, these stair steps that we're on right now, if you look at the 2016 and 17 cycle, right now where we are on this cycle, it's a mirror. And that was a powerful cycle. I mean, I'm telling you, from 900 to like, I can't remember where it ended up. It was under 20 grand or something like that. But that was a hell of a cycle. And there's no reason that we couldn't see that cycle again. You can only suppress something that you can't print for so long. And when I'm talking about suppressing, I'm just talking about moving markets, you know, small amounts for accumulation. I'm not talking about being able to really manipulate Bitcoin. You know, this is such a deep subject, because when you start talking about options and the possibility of paper Bitcoin and all these different things that go along with it, you kind of go down your own rabbit hole. But, you know, the thing is that if Bitcoin really is what I said, it's almost like a virus, and it behaves like a virus. You know, one of the things I do follow Giovanni's power law model. And that's a really interesting model. And it discusses this idea that certain things follow power laws. They're just natural. They're mainly organic organisms in nature. And Bitcoin really does. I mean, it's got like a 95, 96 regression line right now on it. But the thing is, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, I've always considered that Bitcoin was almost like an S-curve. Like, we were going to cross a chasm. Usually on an S curve, you get to about 14, 16%, boom, off it goes. And really, if the power law is correct, that's not going to happen. And all the things that we're talking about, these institutions, the adoption of ETFs, if you look at a power law, it's hard to believe, but actually accounts for all that in the future. So if you say to Santa Stasi Giovanni, you say, hey, what about all these damn ETFs that just came in this last year? Your power law, how does that account for that? And he'll explain it to you and say, no, it's already accounted for. In the future, whatever happened, it's accounted for. I'm not saying that power law won't break someday, but I am saying that this is a relentless progression. We talk about number go up because I do think that that's important for adoption. I think it's how we get some people to FOMO into Bitcoin. We always, from every single cycle, we get people that come in and they sell, then they come back in. Some people, like myself, they come in and they never sell. I'm sure Tony was like that. He probably bought in. Tony, did you ever sell after you bought your Bitcoin?
No, man. The thing is, I've been giving this a lot of thought as well. And I agree with a lot of things that you said. Bitcoin is for everyone, man. It has to be. I'm happy that it's for the good, the bad, and the ugly that's out there. because that's the only way we're going to test this to make sure that this thing is actually what it is, what it's supposed to be, and what, you know, we make it out to be. If it's just for the right people, then we're not really putting it through, you know, a proper test. I want governments to try to blow it up. I want institutions to try to co-opt it. I want all these assholes to try to do whatever they think they're going to do in order to, you know, destroy or maintain their grip on it. And I want to see them all obliterated. And that's exactly what Bitcoin continues to do over and over and over again. With regards to the price, all these institutions that are coming in now, these ETFs and what have you, I mean, these guys are late to the game. I mean, even if they were to buy all the remaining supply that's out there now, what does that amount to? What, like 10%? Like, what's that going to change in the big picture? I think what's really going on, and I could be wrong here, this is just my guess, is that there's a lot of OG Bitcoiners that have bought like a ton of Bitcoin like early on, you know, in the 2010s, 2011s. And they're the ones who are really in charge of this number go up phenomenon that we keep seeing. Like, they keep playing with the liquidity on the market. And I guess they're really good at it, but by timing it, you know, at the precise exact time when, you know, when the greed factor is high, you know, they sell some so because it gets absorbed quickly and what have you. There's a lot of these games that I think are being played, and everyone has his price. I mean, somebody who's bought Bitcoin a long time ago, they want to fund their lifestyle. Right? Like, not everyone is going to have the conviction, I never sell. Some people are going to want to sell something. Let's say they want to buy a house for whatever reason, or whatever it is that they want to buy. Everybody has their price. As you mentioned, you know, like, not everyone is going to go to that, you know, go that distance the way, you know, some of us will. And so all of that collectively, that's what gives that price volatility. Personally, at this stage now, because the big boys are involved now, I don't think we see these massive drop downs anymore, simply because there's no incentive for them to sell it. Like, for example, if a BlackRock is going to buy, you know, like a million Bitcoin, or the government, US government wants to buy a million Bitcoin, like, why would they sell it? For what? If they needed dollars, they just press a button. They don't need to sell the Bitcoin to get these dollars, right? And so I don't think the volatility is coming from these guys, maybe to a tiny amount, but I think it's more of the old timers that are holding these massive amounts of Bitcoin that nobody hears about that are involved in this, you know, to a large degree.
I want to piggyback on that because that's a really good point. And I'll tell you something, I can actually prove through on-chain metrics, I can look at that and I can show that that is correct. When we did the run-up, you remember from 58K and we were up to then to 73, you remember we plateaued, then we went up to 90 and then 100 and something. All during that period of time, long-term holders of Bitcoin were selling into those runs. In fact, at one point, as recently as 2 months ago, we were selling 30,000 coins a day from long-term holders. Altogether in that run up to about 105, there was about a million Bitcoin sold from long-term holders. That's significant. And what's really amazing is that there is such an underpinning of demand right now for Bitcoin. It shocks me sometimes to see how stable this run has been. Now, so, you know, it's funny because you talk about that and the numbers, and it's incredible, you know. Jethro was my call sign in the Navy. There was an old show called Jethro Hillbillies here in the U.S. or Beverly Hillbillies, and his name was Jethro. And he was not a real bright guy. In fact, he had to take his shoes off to count. So passed up to 10. So I'm not going to take my shoes off, but let's just go through some numbers together. So let's say that Bernstein's right, and they're going to take a million Bitcoin MicroStrategy eventually off the market. Let's say that the Bitcoin Act passes this year. You know, you're looking at 500 and some odd Bitcoin every day for 5 years. You're looking at a million Bitcoin gone. You look at Satoshi's Bitcoin, that's a million right there. Then you look as recently as 2 months ago, 71 top countries and corporations had 3 million Bitcoin on their books. Whoops, I'm running out of fingers here already. So then you look at the ETFs. We mentioned that already. Now you're starting to make a hell of a dent in the stuff that's not there. And then let's take the last but not least, how many Bitcoin are lost? You know, I recently saw, I've always thought it was around 4 million. And if I, 4 million, I am out of fingers now. It might be a little bit less, but the bottom line is there is not a lot of Bitcoin supply out there. You know, we've got 19.85 million, and that's, they're already mined. And when we get to 2034, we are at 99%. That's it. And if you look at like exchange balances, oh, I hate to go down this road because if James Check does watch this, he's going to laugh at me. But the thing is, if you look at exchange balances, they have been going down. And it's not like, in fact, Tony already mentioned this. It's not like there's not going to be a supply of Bitcoin. When I talk about these things, I'm not saying that there is going to be the mother of all supply shock squeezes. I'm saying that, you know what? And he mentioned this also, supply and demand. If you look at that and you look at buyers and sellers, where they meet in the middle is always price. It's price. And, you know, I'm telling you right now, I meant what I said. I've got my Bitcoin in an iron fist and I'm not letting go of it. I mean, there are going to be a lot of people like me that are not going to let go of their Bitcoin. And it's the wave of the future, I think. And so at some point, you know, I think TradFi is going to have a, you know, we're going to set the dial to 11, cook noodles, and they're going to have a come to Jesus moment because this is going to be eye-watering, I think, for a lot of people that do not understand Bitcoin and hodlers.
It's going to be a fun moment
for
me.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I think that aha moment comes when people finally realize that they don't want to get ripped off anymore. So they're not going to want to work for dollars or any other local toilet paper. They're going to want to work for sats. And, you know, when you've got enough people going to work, you know, and making a big fuss about being wanting to pay with real money, that's, I think, when you get that volcanic eruption all over the place. And when these things happen, holy shit, man, that's like a global tsunami that takes place like all at once. And that's when all hell breaks loose. All you have to do is keep pushing out that education, leading by example. Nobody's blind. You know, people out there, they may ignore Bitcoin, laugh at you, and make all sorts of silly remarks, but everybody's watching how other people are living their lives. And the more you realize that there are certain amount of people that no longer complain about money and whose life seems to, you know, somehow miraculously keep improving over time, like even the most stubborn person at some point is going to wonder, what the hell is this guy doing that I'm missing out on, right? But everybody has their pain threshold. If you're living in a place where you're still somewhat comfortable or you're extremely lazy, that it's going to take something like monumentally painful to kick you to the curb to make you pay attention, well, then it's just going to take you longer and you're just missing out on like a revolutionary opportunity, which is really, really sad to see sometimes, you know, based on the comments and conversations and market reactions that goes on. This is why I say, like, I wish sometimes you can take everything that's in your head and somehow teleport it into the brains of 8 billion people so they finally see with 100% what it is that you want them so desperately to understand. But, you know, that's like wishful thinking, but it will come. It will come in our lifetimes too. I am I'm 100% sure of this, that this is not going to take a very long time. In fact, I give it under 5 years before we see like some crazy narrative shift, you know, in the world.
Yeah, my base case, I'd be curious to hear everyone else's thoughts, but my base case has still been, you've got to remember that even in a privileged country like the United States, call it 50% of the population does not have assets to keep up with a 3% CPI print, right? And most of the people I know are in more fortunate situations. So they're keeping their heads above water in the stock market or, you know, real estate investments or whatever. But eventually, people need to eat. And there are people who aren't keeping pace and they can't afford to buy their groceries next week. And I think it's when the rubber meets the road on that front and you have a very large constituency who simply can't make it work any longer. The powers that be have a choice between Bitcoin or the guillotine. And I think we move to Bitcoin out of necessity, which my hope is that is that transition happens as democratically through the people as possible. But hell, I'd take a smaller government, pushing to opt us onto a Bitcoin standard as well. George, I'm curious if that's how you see it at all, or you think it's going to be messier or less messy as we transition?
Well, there's some big developments that have occurred recently that are, it's just like nonstop. It's very difficult for me. You know, I read every day, study Bitcoin. I study some macro, and I'm very involved in this. I just do it because I enjoy it. But there's so many new things coming down the road that it's hard for me to keep track of stuff. And one of the biggest things is the announcement in El Salvador at Plan B on January 30th that Tether, of all things, is going to be moving back. I say back because it was born on the Bitcoin network. Omni, I think it was, but they're going to be coming back to Bitcoin and back to the Lightning Network using the, both the Taproot upgrade that we did in 21, but also the Taproot protocol from Lightning Labs, which used to be called Taro, but it allows them to bring tokens onto the network. This is going to be a controversial subject too. A lot of Bitcoiners are going to be pissed about it. And I promise you, if you go up like I just did earlier today, and you go up to somebody, you say, okay, write me a one paragraph essay on how I can stop this from happening. You can't. You cannot do it. So you're going to have to just sit here and watch it unfold. You'll have to decide what what exposure you want in this new world. But that is going to change things significantly. And it's going to allow people, I think in a world that we go forward, we're going to have a lot of people off the base layer. All three of us are probably very fortunate. I'll bet every one of us has used the base layer multiple times. But someday that will be very difficult to do. And these people are going to need these layer two solutions. And Lightning has not been, it's not been as successful as I thought it could be. And this could be the final straw that pushes it into enough liquidity and enough nooks and crannies that people can get some kind of exposure where they can, like in the Aqua wallet, I can transfer with Aqua. That's a pretty good wallet, by the way. I don't know if you guys have ever used it. It's fun. Thing moves quickly from liquid Bitcoin goes to Lightning, goes right into Tether. So you can swap back and forth. It's really not difficult. Fees are low, anonymous transactions, and I'm not shilling for them. I don't give it, I don't care what goes on with them. But what I'm trying to say is, you're going to have if we want this thing to be successful for all those people you just talked about, Michael, let's just say they get $20 or something and they wanted some Bitcoin. That's about the only way they're going to actually be able to afford to do it in the future. And so, I'm very interested to see how this scales. I've got an open mind about things, and I know that I can't stop these events from occurring. And we're going to see a lot more. You're going to see a ton of lending products come out in the next 2 years. And by 5 years, it's going to be widespread through the whole system, all kinds of lending products. And all of us right here, especially Tony, we all know that Bitcoin does not generate yield. No yield on Bitcoin. So all these products that are going to be offering you yield, you're going to have a risk trade-off. And you got to decide what your level of risk is and what you're willing to tolerate. And what the real, there's really two things to risk. I'll tell you something, real quick story, because this saved my life one night when I was working underground. I was down in a mine and the shifter, our boss came up and he said, hey, Jethro, and he had another guy there, Flash. And Flash was kind of slow-witted. But he said, grab one of those rods, I want you to clean the roof. And what he meant was these old steel rods that they use to drill underground. And they're just big enough, you can take, when they come out, you stick a dynamite in them. But they're heavy. I mean, they're carbide tungsten and they weigh a ton. So the thing is, they're all laying on the ground. And what you're going to do is you're going to pick up one of those rods and you're going to walk down the drift for a long ways. You might be all afternoon or evening just poking at the ceiling to see if stuff will come down. And so Flash goes over there and he knows he's going to be carrying this big heavy rod. So what's he do? He picks up a short little one like this. And Jethro, my analysis of risk, so there's two things here. What is your level of risk you're willing to take? For me, I went and grabbed the big, like a 12-foot rod, I think it weighed 75 pounds. And I knew that I was going to be carrying it all afternoon or all night, and I was going to be poking overhead like this, kind of a pain in the ass, and it hurts, after a while. But I didn't care because my level of risk was I needed a long rod. you know what? That saved my life, because the actual risk, the real risk, was stuff falling on you. And it did. I mean, I poked at a rock there and it was as big as a Volkswagen, came down out of that roof, must have weighed 3,000 pounds, and it went right in front of my nose. I mean, if I'd had a short rod like Flash over on the other side standing next to me, he'd be dead. So you've got to, all these products are coming. And when they come down the road and you're sitting there and you got this Bitcoin that you've been hodling and protecting, you better figure out what kind of rod you're going to pick up to go down that tunnel. It better be the right rod.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, that's, you talked about one leg of the stool that we're sitting on here. And this is, by the way, we're at about an hour. Are you good on time? Or
I've got about another 10, 15 minutes. So I'm, but I don't want to rush. And we can always come back and do this again if you want. I'm not, I'm always available.
We'd love to have you back on. Let's get to one more topic that I think would be interesting just to hear your thoughts on, because you've hinted at it, but you can't lose your Bitcoin. At the Bitcoin Way, we preach 100% self-custody, doing it the right way, eliminating counterparty risk. I'm curious how you think about that. And you raise a good point too, that in the future, operating on the base chain is going to be difficult, if not impossible, for many people. Maybe just general thoughts on self-custody. And then Tony, I think this would be a great topic for you to chime in on, because I know you have some opinions.
Well, you know, Tony probably has got opinions that have been, you know, colored by his experience too. And for me, I actually, you know, for me, the best custody you can have is a hardware wallet in your possession, provided you're able to somehow protect it, because physical threats are increasing rapidly. If you follow Jameson Lott's site, I don't know if you do, but you should. On physical attacks, you can see that they've been increasing rapidly. I mean, I'd say we're at one a week, and these are just reported, okay? There are a lot more that are going unreported, and they're brutal. I mean, they're everything from, you know, murder, and then torture, you know, the last one with Balan that got his finger cut off. You know, these are serious issues. And I think at some point in the future, the idea of self-custody on a single hardware wallet or your wallet in your possession, in your home, is just going to be impossible. I'm a strong believer in multi-custody, but I'm telling you right now, most people that are listening to this are not going to be able to do multi-custody on their own. So it's good if you're providing a service for that. I strongly encourage that. The thing is that multi-custody, if you don't know that, if you're going to do three wallets and you don't know the XPubs and how you've got to save them and not lose the wallet configuration file, all that shit, you know what? You're going to lose your Bitcoin. So you said, how do you not lose your Bitcoin? Well, don't do something stupid like thinking you're going to do multi-sig if you don't understand how it works. And, you know, I think, again, as I mentioned, you know, I think that some of these concentrated pools of Bitcoin are threatened. I mean, I don't have any evidence that they're under attack. Actually, I'm sure that Coinbase is attacked every day. But, you know, that's a threat too. And I think going forward, we're going to see more of these multi-sig custodial situations come up too in the future. So I'd be interested to get Tony's ideas on that.
Yeah, it's a valid point, George. The thing is, from where I come from, there's no such thing as a perfect answer to this. If somebody wants to attack you, it doesn't matter what your setup is, whether you're doing it yourself or you're holding it, you know, holding keys in 17 different cities. At that point, you're speculating on the mindset of the attacker. I mean, even if you did have, you know, your keys spread out globally, if he doesn't believe you or, you know, puts a gun to your head and tells you, let's go for a plane ride to these 17 cities to put everything together, then, you know, you're going to have to deal with that problem. Or even if you've involved some institutional, you know, custody of some sort, they'll force you to call them and go through the motions to get to what they want to do, right? There's no guarantee that doing X, Y, or Z will, you know, keep you safe from any attack. That's something I'm very, you know, cognizant of. As far as I'm concerned, it's all about keeping the probability of you being in a situation like this as low as possible. I mean, don't draw unnecessary attention to yourself. You know, like don't go out of your way doing like the basic rookie mistakes of, you know, boasting on social media and all that moronic, you know, stuff that some people do. I mean, that's the number one red flag just there. But I mean, People deal with this on a regular basis, even now. Like, how do billionaires or high-profile people deal with their security? Okay, it's not Bitcoin, but I mean, they're still potential targets, right? So if at some point you have to deal with, you know, personal security because, you know, just makes sense for you, then so be it. But fundamentally, this shouldn't dissuade anyone from understanding that now they have the option of finally owning their money without needing to trust anyone. But of course, that's a brand new series of steps that you have to learn, right? We've never seen anything like this before. So, and it comes from the tech world. And most people don't come from with that background. So it seems very daunting at first, because everybody understands that if they make a mistake, they lost the Bitcoin. That part everybody knows by heart. But it's not nuclear science. Like, self-custody, you know, it's like if you're driving every day, that's already more complicated than doing self-custody. It's really having a good teacher guide you through these steps. And this is what we do here at the Bitcoin Way. We're very OCD about the tech side of things. So we're very critical about the products, like the hardware, for example, and the software that we recommend people use. You know, like we take zero shortcuts with any of this stuff. And if we have to improve the setup every half an hour, like, I'm the type of person who will do it and push out that recommendation that others should follow suit, because this is generational wealth. If it's gone, you're never going to see it again, or at least it's going to be very hard for you to get it back again in the same way you did, you know, many years ago, if that's when you started. So we keep pushing out that education. And if you want to do multi-sig because, you know, you believe it's better suited for you, then we will help you put that together. But with your people, we don't get involved in any multi-sig solution. And we don't believe in any third-party institutional involvement in anybody's solution. But I know there are services out there that offer that, and people think it's good and what have you. But we don't believe in it because, you know, the whole premise of Bitcoin is don't trust anyone except for yourself, personal responsibility. But like you said, it needs a certain technical comfort level. So if you're worried about that and you're willing to go the distance to do it properly, you know, we will teach you. And at the end of the day, those that master the skills of Bitcoin self-custody are the ones that are going to be at the very top for the longest amount of time, because, you know, their risk factor is really zero once they've mastered the skills. So That's my take on this. But, you know, there's people argue against this all day long, and that's fine. You know, only time will tell who's right. But my concern is that a lot of people will continue making and repeating the same bad habits that they're doing, you know, keeping your money in the bank, keeping your Bitcoin with a custodian, thinking it's safe because they have a good reputation or what have you. The complete, you know, silliness of that. You know, I've experienced that myself. You know, when I was in the banking system, I was also dealing with a reputable 5-star bank, and look what happened. I woke up one day and that bank stole everybody's funds. So my trust level in anything third party is not at zero. It's like at minus a million. So, and this is why we have such solid conviction around Bitcoin self-custody, because now we have that option.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, hey, in the interest of time, I got one more question for you, George. I ask at the end of every episode, what is an unpopular opinion that you have, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it?
Well, if you had poop emojis on your screen here, they could just throw the poop emojis on me, because you see, I actually think that the ETFs and the options that have come into our system, I think they're actually going to be good in the long run. And the reason is I want to see Bitcoin succeed. I want to see Bitcoin become eventually the base layer of money, or at least incorporated in some base layer form so that it actually backs money. Or I should maybe say currency, because, you know, money and currency are not the same thing. And how do we get there? We're going to have to massively up our market cap. You know, in order to get what I want, and to get Bitcoin spread all over the world in this base layer, you're going to need like $20-30 trillion to start. Eventually, you know, I expect, you know, if you look at the $900 trillion out there right now in this world, you know, assets, you got about 300 in fixed income, $330 trillion in real estate, they're up about 19, 20 trillion right now in gold, 6 trillion in cars and other shit like that, about the same in art, 18 trillion. So, and Bitcoin sitting there at $2 trillion. So if we want Bitcoin to really succeed, we're going to have to get a lot more liquidity in there. You got to have, and you know, the thing is, these banks are coming. I'm just telling you right now, stand the fuck by. These banks are coming. They're going to all want to be in this space. They're going to want to buy, sell, trade, custody. That's their goal. And they are going to start offering all kinds of products out there for people to make that decision upon what steel rod are you going to pick up that night in the drift, in the tunnel? What are you going to go poke around the ceiling with? So you better get your risk tolerance right. You better know what the real risk is. But these products are coming. And quite frankly, they've got to. And so, you know, there are some Bitcoin maxis that are still pissed off about the, the ETFs and other things. Again, back to basic first principles. What is Bitcoin? It's money for your enemy. You can't stop this. And if you want it to scale, if you want us to succeed, we're going to have to put up with all this stuff and manage our risk as best we can.
I think that's a great place to wrap. Why don't you, George, give a handoff? Where can people find you, learn more about you? Can people buy your art online, or is that like a...
I'm actually in galleries around the country. I sell my work through professionally as an artist. In fact, you can just type my name in the internet. I'm the first thing that comes up. But you know, the thing is, if you want to find me, I'm only on X for social and Bitcoin stuff. So just type in my call sign that I had in the Navy. It's Jethro. It's capital J-E-T-H. R-O-E, and then 111. I don't know why I put that in there, but 111. And then you can find me on there, and you can throw some poop emojis on me if you want. I don't care.
Love it. George, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sorry about the break in my, I think it was, looking here, I think that was my, I must have had like a power surge here in the studio. That doesn't usually happen, but fortunately I got back on, and hopefully we can, everything came out okay.
It'll be perfect. We've got a good editor.
It was great having you, George. Always a pleasure talking to you, man.
You too, Tony. It's nice talking to you in person.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Bye, Jets.
Bye. Bye. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this chat with George. I loved having Tony on as well to bring some additional commentary. George is an awesome guy. Lots of fun. We're going to have him on Bitcoin Banter. It'll probably be before this podcast comes out, so make sure you go back and check that out. Again, check out George's artwork. Go follow him on X. If you're liking this channel, do me a huge favor. Give this video a like, subscribe to the channel, comment, reply, do whatever you can to help feed the algorithm. We would really appreciate that. And of course, if you need help with Bitcoin in proper 100% self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We also help with online privacy phones. We've even got Plan B residency option for all of your self-sovereignty needs. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We really appreciate it and look forward to talking with you. Till next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.